the little boy gazes quietly in at his mother from the threshold of the open door. She's lying there in her sickbed, hardly breathing, and so pale it reminds him of the full moon flashing against the trembling ocean last night. For she trembles too, and is as white and painful to look at as the glimmering along the water was. Sweat is soaking through her thin nightgown, making it look sucked against her skin, as if it's strangling against her, and there's a reeking pile of sheets soaked in afterbirth and blood on the chilly wooden floor, awaiting to be laundered. The busy staff is scuttling about downstairs in a constant state of worry and woe since the birth. And he stares. And he stares at his mother without blinking, thinking that if he holds his eyes open long enough, he will never have to cry for her. His mother hasn't been well since baby Ruby was born this morning, and the kind-faced doctor with his gold-wire glasses and lustrous bald head, sweating sequins profusely in his concern, had said it would take Mother a long time to recover from the difficult birth. That's why Sally, the wet nurse with eyes so green, it's as if they were looted from the crown of an ancient queen, with two pinpricks of black ink for her alert pupils, had been called upon from the Bluebonnet Valley below them, where the salty, icy gales of the vigorous sea that his family lives next to has never touched the neck of a soul who dwelled therein. When the older people busy themselves as older people do, he wanders to the window farthest away from his mother and prays to the moon once night comes, with his hands pressed together and his small fingers intertwined tightly until they very nearly ache. And he shuts his eyes and he pleads in an earnest whisper, "Please, moon, I am too small that I am to live without my dear mother. Please, moon, make her better." But instead of resolving his ills, the knowing moon, still in the dark night sky, remains cold and silent, like the first breath after every unanswered prayer. He sat staring down at the waves until the glittering of them dazzled his eyes, and he began to see things that weren't there. Reflections on the water, sparks pirouetting wildly like reveling fairy folk he'd heard tales of. And even the stars seemed to turn, as if on a tilting dial strung up like beads on a wheel. It's only when he begins to doze off that he sees it, or her, crawling up over a rock and fanning her tail out. It has long dark hair, and it's a woman, because it has the lithe figure of a woman and the shape of breasts as she pulls herself ashore with her elbows. His heart begins to race. It's a mermaid. No, it couldn't be, he thinks to himself. Mermaids are made of sailor stories, and all the men who drowned did so because they were drunk and fell overboard, just like Father has said before. Once the creature has successfully positioned itself through the toothy edges and slimed algae of the several sea rocks littered about in the beach sand, she puts herself in such a way that one had not been wise to her mounting the taller part of the rocks with her pale elbows and wriggling in between them to conceal herself would not be aware of her presence at all. But the little boy felt her presence inside of him, like a pulse somehow, and when he saw the last of her obscure itself in shadows, her spidery fingers vanishing between the rocks, he waits, and waits to prove to himself that what he'd seen is a lie, and he sees nothing again. In the morning he leaves to go see if what he'd saw in the darkness was true in the light. When he arrives, she's seated against a rock as if she's been waiting for his company, unmoved by the intrusion of it, and not at all stunned. The amber and crimson scales of her long, glorious fishtail incandescent and half immersed in a tide pool with lingering seaweeds, she watches and waits for him to speak. Some of the scales unevenly decorate her bony shoulders and cluster in areas of her rib cage like blemishes. She's nude at her upper half, with her nipples erect from the cold morning winds, but the sight of her nakedness doesn't shock his young eyes. Her hair is a strange, wet, dark green, and she never seems to blink or move her clean face, even as he stares at her while taking a seat on the rock across from where she is still watching him. It reminds him of animals, how they watch, how they wait. "Are you magic?" he asks her. "No," she says, but she rethinks the question and answers, "Yes." "From where do you come?" he asks. "The deep sea," she answers. "Can you help my mother to be better?" he asks her. "Do you know me?" "You're a mermaid." "And have you heard of mermaids?" "They lure men into the depths with song and kill them and eat them." "Then why do you ask if I can help your mother?" "Because," he says, "because magic can do anything." "It's so," she says. "It can. And what sort of magic do you think you can help your mother with? What's happened to her?" "She's had a baby and she's hurt." "Oh," she said, in an oddly sibilant and soothing tone. "It's so that all children harm their mothers by making them worry forever. Where's the baby now?" "She is inside, being taken care of by the wet nurse with the eerie eyes from the Bluebonnet Valley," he says. "I will help your mother, but you will have to bring me the three things for which I ask." "What are they?" he asks desperately, ready to give her anything. "Bring me 7 of your mother's tears, 3 gray hairs from your father's head, and the baby wrapped in red." "The baby? What will you do with the baby?" "My kind love children, don't worry what we do with them. If you want your mother back, you'll do as I say, and I'll be here waiting." And so he runs home as fast as he can and steals a small crystal goblet for the 7 tears and a linen pouch for coins that he can use for the 3 gray hairs. The older people are too preoccupied to notice what he's up to, and when he ventures upstairs, Sally, the wet nurse, walks out of the room in which she shares a bed with the baby in order to feed her. Her peculiar white blonde hair is loosely tied in 1 long braid that hangs down like a rope over one of her shoulders. She smiles at him and moves into the washroom. The silence tells him that the baby must be sleeping, and his instincts say that this is a great time to accomplish all of his tasks for the creature waiting for him back on the rocks. He tiptoes into his mother's room and she is asleep, but she is so sad that even when she slumbers, she weeps in agony. He counts 9 tears rolling down her cheeks and traps them in the crystal goblet, thinking that the water creature will have use for and appreciate the extra stock. And he gives his mother a kiss on her forehead and promises her that she will be well soon, for he is seeing to it. His father is so exhausted that in his library he sleeps soundly and deeply undisturbed by the morning light running down from the windows. As the little boy approaches, he sees a new field of gray hairs specifically cropping on the right side of his father's head. And the selection is so vast that he pulls a few more than is needed, but not so much that his father wakes. Surely, the water creature will value having more. When he comes into the hallway, Sally is nearing the baby's room, and she asks him kindly, "William, whatever are you doing about so early, in such a hurry as well, with a crystal goblet and a linen pouch for coins?" "Sally," he says, "I have found magic to heal mother, and so I must hurry and take the baby yonder." "Why, take the baby with you where to?" Sally asks. "Just outside," the little boy answers. But at length, Sally refuses to give the little boy the baby, for she senses something amiss. She asks him what's truly going on, and he tells her how he'd prayed to the moon last night, and that he'd seen a creature come out of the sea, and that the siren was waiting for him now, having given him these things to collect, promising to heal his mother of her agony once he takes them to her. "Of course, the creature came last night," Sally says. "Those types of folk can heal the sick, and they can sense new blood. They love human beings for a different reason than, say, the gentle folk of the hills, or the sea creatures, the mermaids. They dine on flesh. She will eat the baby, should you give it to her. The baby will surely die." "But what about mother?" the little boy asks, with tears now falling down his cheeks. "I have an idea," Sally says. The three of them, Sally, the strange wet nurse, the little boy named William, and the baby wrapped in red named Ruth, make their way to the hidden spot between the rocks where last the mermaid rested, awaiting the boy's payments. But when they arrive, the water creature is gone. The little boy says, "I swear she was here. I swear it on my life." "I know that she was, William. I saw her too. But she has left, for she saw me. I am from the other world like she. I can heal your mother using all the things you've already gathered, but it comes with its own price. You must come with me to the other world and leave this one behind forever. Will you come away with me, O human child?" "But what will happen to my mother? Surely she will miss me dearly," the little boy says. "Indeed she will. But she will have a new baby to take care of. She will mourn you for the rest of her life, wondering where, oh, where is my sweet William? Where has he gone to? She will never forget you, but she will live. What is your choice?" she asks. "I have no choice," he says. "I must go with you." Sally takes the tears from the crystal goblet and smooths them over little William's eyelids, and from then on, he can see into both the human world and the other world. She braids the gray hairs he'd gathered from his father's head into his own hair, and from then on, he can heal the sick, too. He goes back into his mother's room to say goodbye, carrying his baby sibling with him. And he sees his mother's spirit walking about her slumbering, weeping body, unable to get back in. "Lie down now, mother. It's going to be all right," he says. And she kisses him. The spirit always understands what the body cannot when the spirit is within it. And to her, this will have just appeared to be a dream when she wakes. They embrace, and they say their goodbyes, and they give their love, and William places the baby within his mother's pale sleeping arms, just as the color begins to revive in her cheeks and her eyes begin to flutter open, just as her spirit lies down within her body again, just as she begins to wake. William became a handsome prince in the other world, or, as some call it, the fairy realm. As many years passed in the human world, merely 1 month had passed for William, and he grows curious of his family. By now, when he returns, his sibling has grown old, and she has a family of her own. Her mother and her father, which are his parents as well, passed a decade ago in a small grave beyond the back porch of the house, along with his parents' headstones, reads William's name. And one night, as he walks along the beach, when the moon is full, and he stares up at the very window he once prayed to save his mother, he sees a small boy's face staring down at him.